Welcome to Holden Village. This afternoon, Bruce Eklund will be speaking on Valuing Our Children, Love and Violence. So let's listen in on Bruce.
It's a class that's part of a group of classes that I'm teaching while I'm up here, essentially looking at the continuum of abuse and nurture that seems to be happening within our culture. To use it as an opportunity for me to come to grips with some of the things that I struggle with professionally in dealing with the results of abuse, the impact of abuse on kids. I work at the Snohomish County Juvenile Court in Everett, Washington, which is just over the mountains. It's a county of about 500,000 people, third largest county in Washington. And we struggle within our county, as I think most places do, with issues of abuse, both struggling with parents who abuse their children as well as children who've been abused and becoming problems within our culture in terms of their acting out behavior. What I'd like to do with today is see it as a discussion. And what I'm going to do is provide some material that I hope will evoke questions, concerns, comments. I think that it's interesting in a culture that there's kind of some of the fundamental things that I feel about our culture is that sometimes we're pretty hypocritical between what we often say about children in particular and many of the ways that we behave culturally and support and acknowledge them as indeed valuable. And it's not a criticism of individuals. I think that there's some cultural mix that seems to happen that makes it difficult. One of those issues, and the one that I'd like to focus on today, is the issue of to spank or not to spank. What are we looking at with the issues of spanking? To realistically look at some of the research, to talk about the effects of spanking, how we get to a point where culturally we see spanking as often a primary tool in parenting, and looking at possibly what some of the alternatives may be. So we'll move through some material that's related to that, that kind of touches on topics around spanking, linking spanking in a sense with an attitude within our culture that I think it's important that we struggle with, because as all of us have one thing in common, if not more than one, but at least one thing in common, and that's that all of us at some point were children, and that means all of us at some point went through the stage of essentially being very vulnerable, being very dependent, and depending upon those bigger and older and stronger than us to help us emerge into the world. And the way we as adults, the most common way that we learn how to parent is indeed those experiences that we had as a child, the parenting that was provided to us. Issues from the past in terms of the way things used to be, as in all things, there's a lot of changes that have been happening within our culture. A lot of we know more. There's been certainly more research that's been able to occur, particularly around children in the last 25 years, and part of that research certainly deals with the issues of spanking. So I'll be sharing with you a couple of books. Just I'll mention them now. This book, I didn't find out about it in time to get an order into the Holden bookstore, but it's called Beating the Devil Out of Them, Corporal Punishment in American Families. And it's by a man by the name of Murray Strauss, who has done, is probably the foremost researcher in corporal punishment issues. And so I'll be using his book to guide us through some of the discussion. And then a book by Jean Ilfley Clark, some of you may know of it, called Self-Esteem, A Family Affair, and it's kind of a good solid, it's been around for quite a while, I think the late 70s is when it was published, 78. She now has a new book out called Growing Up Again, which is, I think, subtitled Parenting Ourselves and Parenting Our Children, and using some of the same kinds of, kind of enlarging on some of the issues that are here. Both of them, I think, I have, the other one is brand new and is in the bookstore. And I recommend it to you because it's real solid in terms of its understanding of children mostly, and the child in all of us that we can play with. And then a couple of John Bradshaw books. One, John Bradshaw on the Family, which takes off on his the television series that he did. And then a new one called Creating Love. He has a chapter on here in Love Between Parents and Children. So those are the resources, the primary resources that I'm using for just to do a brief, maybe about 10 minutes. I'll present some information and then we'll move into some discussion. Most abuse that comes about in families where physical abuse is actually found by the courts occurs, it's somewhere between 90 and 95% of it occurs in the act of parenting. So the parent is then involved in doing something with the child, interacting with the child in a way that the parent perceives as a parenting, you know, correcting, usually punishing or disciplining the child. The focus in most of those incidents is around spanking. And most of the issues with physical abuse of children then comes with physical abuse that goes beyond what some cultural line in our culture defines as abuse. So if we end up with a continuum of behaviors like this, at some point in time, and with the line going up here, it doesn't really plateau, it just keeps going. At some place, as if you look at the line going up here as being some form of physical corporal punishment or physical hitting or striking of the child, spanking, as this increases, as the force or the frequency or the injury to the child or whatever, at some point in time, our laws define a place where beyond that point is abuse. Okay, so the definition here then, or the situations where people then step over that line, 95% of the time it's in the act of parenting. They're doing something that they as a parent believe in. And what I'd like to do is kind of go through, take a bird's eye look at research that's been done within those families where abuse has been found, and look at some of the factors that have been common within those families, and use that as a means of kind of taking a look at the whole issue of striking our children. I think just one disclaimer needs to happen. As we begin to look at families, whenever you look at research and you begin to say, okay, these are the factors that are common within a family where abuse occurs, you can't use those factors, apply it to some other family and say, hey, they have these factors, therefore they must abuse their children. Because it doesn't work that way. It's not you can't use it retroactively. We're only saying these are some things, we can get some insight into these families and the problems maybe within these families to help us better understand what some of the issues are. But it's not predictive. And so that's as a disclaimer for what we're going to talk about. Basically, we're going to look at four primary things that seem to be common in those families. One is a parent with the potential to abuse, and we'll look at some specific kinds of things what that means. A child who's seen as special or different in some way, that there's some a unique aspect to the child. Special, not necessarily here meaning a positive, but more meaning different. Somehow the child stands out. There's a high tension level. And then fourthly is there's usually some crisis which sets the abusive act in motion. We'll primarily be looking at these two. Parent with the potential to abuse, there's a number of areas that seem to stand out and to be most common. One is substance abuse is very common in situations where abuse occurs. And there's a couple of very good reasons for that. Alcohol is the most common substance abuse or abuse substance within our culture. Two issues around alcohol that are, I think, real significant to why they are so specifically dangerous in parenting, and especially for parents who spank their children. Alcohol has a capacity when it goes into your bloodstream, and as a medical person, you probably know this far better than I do, but it's absorbed by the bloodstream, and it goes immediately first to the extremities, so that the early warning system, effectively, that you have in your hand as to how hard you're hitting your children, is gone. One of the things you should try, if you have a glass of wine or a bottle of beer or something, before you have it, before you've had any alcohol, go up to a table and slap the table, and you feel the tingling in your hand, and kind of visualize or remember how hard you hit the table. Then have just even one beer or one glass of wine and wait about 15 minutes and go back and hit the table the same amount. Think about hitting it exactly the same amount, and you won't feel. You will not feel to this. You have to hit the table substantially harder in order to get the same kind of tingling sensation. So alcohol, the effects of it are immediate because it's absorbed into the bloodstream, and you basically lose one of our, so the people that do hit their kids and they kind of instinctively know how hard they're hitting them because of this early warning system, it increases how hard they end up hitting their kids before they know that, or so it increases the likelihood of injury. The second part of alcohol is that it definitely affects our moods and affects our ability to think through and to problem solve. So it's very, the thing that people use it for in terms of as a substance of choice is that it is relaxing. It sets us, it makes us mellow. It makes some people violent, but it basically affects the way that we problem solve and think. So substance abuse is a real significant factor there. Isolation is another factor. Parenting is tough work. Parenting is hard work. There's oftentimes a lot of intensity between parent and child. And if there isn't some way of diffusing that along another line so that all the parents' issues and the frustrations and the things that just come up around life aren't channeled into the child. So isolation is a factor that's important. Having a support system as a parent is we'll be talking more about that tomorrow in terms of affirming the hard work of parenting. It's an extremely important thing that we do to keep us focused well on our children and not essentially dumping our personal issues on them. A third area, and these three seem to be the most common and the most prominent, the most important in affecting abuse, is that the parent has learned that hitting is the way that you change someone's behavior if you don't like that behavior and you have authority over them. So those issues of authority, and that the way you get people to change their behavior is by hitting them. And where would you guess that would be where a person would get that perspective?
From their own experience.
Okay, so that and research strongly supports that, is that people who have been spanked or been hit as children grow up to be adults who tend to more strongly support it as an effective tool in parenting. So if that's, again, somehow feeling that then as a parent, that if I want my child to change their behavior, the way that you get people to do that is by hitting them. There's other issues around this having to do with personal distractions, things that make it difficult for parents to focus on their children. If they have some significant, severe personal crises that they're going through, it takes all their energy to deal with the personal issues and personal crises. And so therefore the parent or the children become outside that sphere of the energy. So in some way, and there's other lists that we can go on. There's like about 10 or 12 points. But the key ones then are isolation, substance abuse, and then somehow that belief, that sense that it's important that we spank kids in order to get effective behavior. Second area or factor is a child is somehow seen as different or special. In the field, we talk about them essentially as target children. And there's a number of different ways that children can become target children. One is children that are premature or low birth weight children require more energy. They require more medical attention. They require, they tend to be more colicky. They tend to take just more energy on the part of parents to be able to deal with. Other ways are people who expect to have boys. You're welcome to stay. It's certainly not distracting to me. I don't know. Yeah.
Spank him if he gets
angry. Please don't. The child. Let's see, where was that? Let me refocus here a second. Child is seen as special in several ways.
Gender.
That the parents wanted a girl and got a boy, wanted a boy and got a girl. Somehow there's a sense that the child is not what the parent wanted. Another way is that if you have a boy and I'm, say, the father, and I'm really athletic and I love football, and I want my son to be really athletic and love football, and my son ends up being a musician or an artist and loathing football. Some of those, the kind of parental expectations for our children that can set us into kind of subtly being at odds with our children. Same thing with girls. If you want a girl who's musical or whatever, and you get a girl who's an athlete and not interested in all in music, it's the gender doesn't have anything to do with it, but somehow some preset expectations on the part of the parent can set a child apart within the eyes of the parent. Other ways, we live in a culture with a high rate of divorce. Just because parents get divorced, it doesn't change the genetic makeup of the child. And so the child ends up continuing to remind the parent of the person that they had all this conflict with that brought about the divorce. All of these are things that, to a certain extent, we all struggle with a little bit. But what happens is, in my mind, it's kind of like a mound that we have to go over to get to the other side, and it takes energy for us. And oftentimes, we need to, if we didn't have to kind of get up over that, we have to spend energy that maybe we don't have. And it creates a kind of a built-in tension. Also, culturally, in our culture, children tend to not have economic value. And we bring in something that I think culturally we're always in this state of tension between things that are valuable, that can somehow be linked to dollars and have economic value. I think that there's something inherent in a capitalistic and a consumer production system that builds that around us, that we begin to look at things. And that's one of the great things about Holden, at least for me, is that it really gives me an opportunity to get away from the pressures of that and to begin to experience value in ways other than economic. high tension level. I think we live in a society where it's kind of always present. There's a lot to do, a lot of issues, a lot of things that create this kind of constant high tension level. In families where abuse occurs, it seems to be a pervasive part of their family dynamics. Organization within families oftentimes is not able to meet the demands of the members within the family. So there's a sense that this is always there. It affects energy levels. Energy is taken off and just, you know, it's kind of bled off so that we don't have this sense of energy to cope with the things then that come up. It's kind of like a balloon that has a small hole in it, you know. You keep blowing and blowing and blowing air into it, and you never get it fully up. And so it sets up the stage, in a sense, for the crisis that happens, so that you have here these factors that are happening, and then there's something that happens, and oftentimes the crisis doesn't have anything to do with the child, but it has something to do with the fact that the child is there and happens to be present. So that the child ends up, or the parent ends up coming home, having had a bad day at work. Maybe they were late at work because the buses were running late, and so they got, and it was the fifth time that's happened in the last 2 months, and their boss was really angry at them, and they kind of carry this home. They may stop off at the tavern on the way home to kind of get themselves relaxed because they know that it was a bad day. And they come home, and their kid, who they said they wanted the bike out of the driveway when they came home, the bike was still in the driveway. And so there's this, the crisis, the true crisis was the pressure that happened at work, but the crisis of the kid leaving his bike in the driveway is what in the mind of the parent is the driver. But what comes out, instead of the weight of just the bike in the driveway, the kid gets the whole boat. And so there's that's kind of the type of thing. It can be a major crisis that can set it off as well. You know, a loss of a job or a death of a loved one, a divorce, something like that. Or it can be minor, like the washing machine doesn't work, having to figure out. And the most significant thing about it is that you don't have the resources to cope with that crisis, the combination of these things and set the child up to receive a swat or a slap or a backhand or something like that in frustration out of the as a response by the parent. Some of the things in parenting that I think are real important that we look at and think about is the concept of balance. And I guess I'd like to engender a little discussion around balance in parenting. Look at a continuum then. I'm going to erase this. Look at a continuum then between structure and nurture. The importance of that in our parenting. What are some of the... some of the things that come to mind when we talk about kind of two sides of parenting, one being the structure side and one being the nurture side? What are some words that you may want to put on?
Your child is to give them structure.
Okay, good. That's true. And that's part of that sense. If you look at balance, I guess what I'm looking at is at balance, but there's also some things that come around in the middle that essentially can be labeled both ways, and certainly possibly safety we might put in that, because there's a sense of nurture and safety as well. What are some other things that might be in the middle between?
Sense of security, you get from both. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. One of the things I was thinking of is like hugging. Hugging is, there's a bodily, physical, arms around us that provides a sense of structure. and those boundaries around us.
It's under nurture, just that interacting with, well, with both adults and peers, actually.
Okay, how do you mean interacting?
Well, just sort of etiquette, I suppose. I mean, in a certain sense of please and thank you and appreciation.
Can you think of a...
No.
Etiquette? Etiquette, maybe?
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know how to spell it.
Manners.
Yeah, manners.
Under structure, I think routine.
I'm running out of chalk. Okay. If we look at where would spanking fall? If we think of it in terms of this sense of structure versus nurture, where would spanking fall?
Probably under structure, although we tend to feel that it doesn't end with the spanking, that we need to discuss what the problem was and then that we make amends before the whole thing's over. So the spanking is the end of the process.
Okay, but the spanking itself
structure.
would be structure. What are some other, spanking would be a consequence, right? What are some other consequences that also provide structure? I'll just go, not TVTO.
Well, the natural consequences of, you know, being unsafe, you can be hurt, you know. You know
okay.
What
I'm
saying? Yeah. Loss of privilege.
Any more on the nurturing side here? Let's look at spending time a little bit. What are some of the ways that we can spend time with our kids?
Reading.
One of the things that I guess I'm thinking about is just the concept of listening. And you had mentioned self-esteem. One of the real valuable things about listening is that it's probably without anything else going on, that if we listen, if we spend time listening to the children, and they, by our listening, then there's that sense of value that what they have to say is important.
When our second son was born, I had heard someone talking about spending special time just with him that couldn't be interrupted by phone. And he's 11, and we haven't done that for several years, but he reminds me, Mom, could we have a special time? You know, that was really important for you.
Yeah.
It's a sign to me that we need to do that.
You need to do that,
it's
yeah.
Not going to stop the thing to continue, though. That was good on your nurturing to have, and your time. To do whatever you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I never got a spanking, but I first didn't have to leave a switch, go to the bathroom, and wait until my mother wasn't unhappy about it. And then we had a talk, and maybe I got a spanking. Maybe I didn't. So I never got spanked when she had any.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things, or some of the things that we'll talk about a little bit later, I think really directly focus on that point. And one of the things I think that that I guess I believe is that the your relationship with your mother was more powerful than the spanking. So you don't have to have the spanking in order for that to be an effective intervention. You're just having you go wait in the bathroom.
I can't remember whether I used to pick out a light switch or.
Yeah. One of the things that that the research is showing us, and the reason that I kind of brought this up here, is that is the most powerful effect that we have on our children is in our in the relationship that we have with them, and oftentimes because of some of the cultural issues around spanking, that somehow spanking is put forward as an important tool that culturally that we're kind of told as parents that we can't live without. That research basically shows that it's not the spanking, that in fact spanking has some side effects to it, that no matter how much we talk with our children afterwards, no matter how many things we do around the spanking, the spanking in and of itself does have side effects on our children, and that nonviolent interventions on the part of the parents are, number one, as effective as spanking without the side effects, the long-term side effects then that occur. A couple of the issues around spanking that seem to be important within our culture are, number one, that spanking for many people, it takes less time and less energy, and it brings about it does two other things. It brings about immediate response on the part of the child. Okay, it does do that. It brings that immediate response. But there are some nonviolent tools that can also do that. But spanking definitely does that well, and it also is reflective very often of. There's a release on the part of parents that occurs when we spank that oftentimes is interpreted by the parents as being effective, that it's we take some kind of action that is socially supported, and that sense of taking that action, there's actually it's an adrenaline high type of thing, that the process of that response tends to reinforce using it the next time because that tended to kind of feel we got some sense of release in a very frustrating situation. The context of spanking is a real important thing, I think. Struggling with often people who use spanking, most people who use spanking, struggle with the context for it, and struggle with when is it important, how do we use it, how are we going to, what kind of limit, are we going to use it only as a last resort, some of those kinds of things. What Dr. Strauss talks about in those instances is that very often there's a couple of things about spanking that tends to increase its use even when we want to not use it very often. And one of them has to do with children themselves, in that children, it's real important for children to know the limits. Okay? And that's part of this sense of structure, and part of the sense of being safe is to know that there's boundaries out there and that our parents are in charge. Our parents are are controlling those limits. A child isn't going to learn where those limits are by staying in the middle. Okay? In order for that child to be reassured that there are limits, the child has to explore those limits. So a two-year-old, by definition, is going to find all the wall sockets in this room within a short period of time. And part of then the job of the child at that point is to find out what those limits are. And if we choose to spank, then we are, by that definition, by the fact that the children will find out, even if we only want to spank at the very as a very last resort, they will push us to a point where that is there. One of the other things that has been found in the research is that parents who choose to not spank their children tend to pay more attention to the smaller details in the child's life, so that and part of that is learning the incremental tools of parenting that so that you can be involved and connected in ways that ultimately don't require the spanking. I think that culturally we have to reassess. We have to reassess spanking as a whether or not it ultimately does what we want it to do. On Monday we had a session on looking at the goals of parenting. And unfortunately, this is like 3 days later, so we don't have a lot of connectedness between those two. But one of the things that in terms of coming up with issues about the goals of parenting is looking, most of the goals of parenting have to do with our children being having self-esteem, being self-motivated, being good problem solvers, being able to think through situations and make decisions for themselves. Those are not skills that spanking helps. If anything, spanking tends to create situations for the child to, I wrote some here that tend to be the opposites in parenting and the impact of parenting with using spanking or corporal punishment as one of the tools, and then non-use of force or corporal punishment here. You have issues of control here, which spanking does reinforce, the control of the parent, versus guidance. Focus on situations where spanking most often occurs tends to be obedience, on the child obeying the parent. And it's most often seen then when you have a strong-willed child. And most two-year-olds are strong-willed children. Versus participation here, in terms of participating as part of the decision makers and being seen as an important component in deciding what to do and not to do. So obedience versus choice, in a sense, over here, participation being choice. Spanking tends to create a sense of external discipline, where the discipline upon the child, upon the person, is externally focused, or the locus of control is outside, so that children who are spanked tend to, when that immediate, the person that they fear for the spanking is not present, that sense of control is not there, and so they tend to be more out of control, as opposed to here, there's the sense of internal discipline, that the choices are within, so that even though the parent is not present, there's a stronger sense of that child knowing what they need to do and having the internal discipline then to do what it is that you know, their parents are expecting or wanting of them. With spanking, esteem or value tends to depend upon the child's behavior. So how the child behaves tends to be the key as to whether they feel valuable. And if they misbehave, then they don't have value. Whereas on this side, that sense of self-esteem, again, is more internally rooted and is not directly focused on their behavior. But it has more to do with inherent value and a sense of being valuable rather than behaving valuably. Just some kind of, and it's a, how do I say it? It's something that is a hard decision for most of us. It's not something that's easily defined and easily come to. Oftentimes, because of issues that we bring from our own parents, dealing with issues around if we declare that spanking is not appropriate, then in a way that's kind of saying that our parents were wrong, and that's sometimes real hard for us to do around issues of parenting. To confront that maybe that there are some things that are different, that we maybe know more things, and that we still carry with us that sense of wanting to not, the child within us in a sense still is connected to that parent and fearful of creating a negative, seeing our parents negatively. I've been going on too much. Any comments or?
Well, yeah. Question: What were the long-term effects, side effects of spanking that you were mentioning earlier?
Okay, this book basically talks about four of them. One is that children who have been spanked tend to have a higher rate of depression and suicide.
Now, kind of normal spanking as opposed to abuse, or what are we talking about when he says spanking?
We're talking about spanking, and he makes a real strong point of this, is that because kids are spanked, it doesn't mean that they're going to be depressed or suicidal, okay? It just means that if you take the research that he's done looks at children who've been spanked and children who haven't been spanked, and the likelihood that it increases the risk of suicide and depression with spanking there. There are other factors that are significant in that as well, and it's not just spanking. He has, in his research, has attempted to isolate out spanking as a factor and try and correlate some of the others so that you don't, so that you have other issues balance is in spanking being the primary difference, and so suicide and depression is one. It increases, and some of the things that you think about, at least what I know about in working with teens who are suicidal and depressed, that these are some of the things that they really deal with, really struggle with, is that issue of control, and particularly the sense of esteem that comes. Children who are depressed and children who are suicidal, that sense of being valuable only because of the way they behave is a real strong sense in them. Another is that there is a link between criminal behavior, children who go on to commit crimes. And again, it's the same type of thing. It's just because kids are spanked, it doesn't mean that they're going to commit crimes. It increases statistically the likelihood that they will. The other part of that is that one of the things about spanking is that it creates confusion and boundaries between a child's perception of when is it appropriate to invade someone else's space and hit them. It creates the question in their mind that if you're more powerful, if you love someone, if you're in a position of, if you're stronger and bigger, that those are issues that are linked somehow with violence, and it creates confusion on their part around that so when they get into situations later where they're trying to make decisions as to whether it's appropriate for me to punch out this guy or not. Well, if I'm bigger and if I think I can get away with it, it somehow carries, it decreases their sense of looking for, or it increases the likelihood that they're not going to look for other alternatives. Third way is that there is what he calls a fusion of sex and violence. And it has to do with, again, that sense of love and people that love each other. Then if spanking occurs, it introduces an okayness in using violence in situations where there's love. And it creates it fuses that sense of, and we have a problem in our culture in terms of the links of sex and violence. It's all around us. It's in our media. It's certainly the statistics on domestic violence is very, very, it's increasing. We have more and more physical violence that's occurring within our interpersonal relationships. And part of that is linked, a significant piece of that, according to the research, is linked to the fact of being spanked as children, is linking those two. The third one, and this is one that surprised me, is that he found a significant difference in people who were spanked and their ability to earn income. An income reduction in terms of, and he identified it with a sense of alienation, an inability to problem solve, to have the internal kind of skills that basically come with self-esteem, the ability then to as an adult, there was a significant difference in the amount of income that the children who were spanked versus children who were not spanked were able to earn. So there are those differences that I think it needs more research. I think it's, you know, this is basically the first book such as this and the first type of research such as this. But it's powerful. It's a powerful statement, and I think that it's worthy of our consideration in terms of rethinking spanking. A couple of things, or one other issue that I wanted to point out about abuse situations that I think can give us some information. Identifying high-risk situations is kind of a little bit different way of looking at it than the four factors that I said. You have personal issues for the parents. One of them, essentially, and I don't have up here, is expectations for the child. So we have certain expectations in terms of what our child is going to be. And it actually is a pretty significant piece because it's kind of part of this parenting pedagogy that we have learned from our culture, but mostly we've learned it from our parents in terms of what kind of expectation, what kind of messages did we hear from our parents in terms of what we as a child should be, how we should behave. So we carry those with us. And so we have some expectation that this child is going to be able to provide something back to me. And so then you end up with these situations or these parts of the parent that create these personal issues for the parent. Substance abuse we talked about, stress or crisis was a part of those other factors. This parenting pedagogy is on top and right down because that's where we learn how to respond to kids or what kind of the baseline thinking is about what it is that we're going to do with kids. How are kids, what's my job as a parent then? And it's learned from our culture and it's learned from our parents. Isolation, special circumstance child. And then what happens is that as we deal with our own personal crises, it creates situations where bonding with the child is low. And how do I describe it? If we look at childhood, okay, there's different, depending upon how fine we cut our observation, where we cut our observation, there's different rhythms that happens within that 18 years that we are, where our children are legally dependent upon us as parents. And if we cut it into real small sections, we see even ups and downs in terms of our parenting. And as we go over longer periods of time, there's some periods of time where we're better parents, that the skills that we have, that we've grown up with, are better suited for the stage of the child, and so our parenting soars. And then we hit a time where it may have been trouble for us, or we have financial crisis in the family, or other kinds of distractions that happen, and so our parenting skills kind of drop. And what we're looking at is not those dips, because we all have those. What we're looking at is the overall impact, relationship, in a sense, that we establish with the child. And the parenting pedagogy sets the tone for that. It's the some of the things that a lady by the name of Alice Miller, who is a German psychiatrist, came up with, I thought, a helpful list of what's called poisonous pedagogy, things that have kind of been passed down that tend to interfere with our ability to do these things, to do the nurturing, and set us up more into a control type of posture. And let me just read those. Adults are masters, or the masters, not the servants of children. Adults determine in godlike fashion what is right and what is wrong. A child is held responsible for their parents' anger. I think that's one of the ones that tends to get me the most, in terms of when I get angry at something that they do, instead of owning it as my anger, I would tend to kind of blame the person that was doing something I didn't like at that point, as to that it was somehow their fault. Parents must always be shielded. And this is something I think that we tend to carry with us from our own childhood, is we need to protect our parents. There's a role reversal that happens oftentimes in parenting, and that's that we can't question our parents. We need to be careful about protecting them. The child's life-affirming feelings, their real feelings now, pose a threat to the autocratic adult. Sixth, the child's will must be broken as soon as possible. I think that that's something that the parenting pedagogy that we have evolved, and hopefully we're breaking out of that, but there's still, in a lot of the parenting books, particularly on the strong-willed child, is that sense of breaking that strong will. And I think that that's a problem for us. All this must happen at a very early age, so the child won't notice and will therefore not be able to expose the adults. Okay, this is Alice Miller's perception. She sees that there's a what she calls false information about children and about parents that kind of perpetuate this poisonous pedagogy within our culture. A feeling that duty produces love. That kind of comes into this whole section of control and obedience, that somehow obedience is that if a child is obedient, that therefore they are loving. Hatred can be done away with simply by forbidding it. Parents deserve respect simply because they are parents. Children are undeserving of respect simply because they are children. Okay, these are things that, again, this is false information that tends to go along with kind of promoting that the poisonous pedagogy. Obedience makes a child strong. A high degree of self-esteem is harmful. Low degree of self-esteem makes a person altruistic. Interesting. But I've heard that. I've heard people talk about that if you're, that self-esteem, and to a certain extent, the behavior of a person without self-esteem tends to be one of always kind of doing for others, not having the boundaries to be able to know appropriate times, to be able to kind of back off and take care of themselves. Tenderness or doting is harmful. Responding to a child's needs is wrong. Severity and coldness are a good preparation for life. Good Norwegian saying. A pretense of gratitude, to pretend to be grateful, okay, is better than honest ingratitude. The way you behave is more important than the way you really are. One of the things about that, and I'll be doing a session next week on looking at valuing our children in a culture that where production and consumption are kind of key elements, dealing then with that sense of I am who I am, not what I do. So that kind of comes out of that. Neither parents nor God would survive being offended. The body is something dirty and disgusting. Strong feelings are harmful. And parents are creatures free of drives and guilt. And parents are always right. Just, again, just this is one person's presentation on it, but it provides some insights, I think, in terms of some of the struggle that all of us have in looking at the issue of parenting, and particularly issues of spanking that we carry with us, baggage, all of us do, from previous generations. One of the things, though, that I think is real important as we talk about this is that we're not dealing with blame here. We're not dealing with if I was spanked and I was spanked as a child, that somehow it's a blaming on my parents. It's more a realistic look that they were making decisions based upon the information that they had at the time that I was being raised, and we have different information now, and it's appropriate to be able to not continue with the same skills or the same tools that my parents used, and choose, because of some of this research, to be able to throw that particular tool out and say, I'm not going to use that. Time gets away. Yes?
I think that with our children, I have found that our 1.5-year-old, he needs a spanking occasionally. You know, we would prefer not to have to do that. But it does definitely, you know, as I said before, it's not the end of the process, but it does make a difference. And I think the big problem I have with humanists who don't believe in spanking, and I don't know if these people are all Christians or not, is that we are all by nature sinful. My child is sinful. Mm-hmm. You know, I love babies, but they want everything. You know, they are sinful by nature. And just as my sinful nature has to be molded to become more Christ-like, theirs also does. And I think some of the things of self-esteem and obedience you have there, you know, I've seen some of that in the teaching in the schools the last 20 years. Self-esteem is so important. Kids can't do math, but they have self-esteem. Well, I don't think, you know, and I think we're coming back, and the pendulum is swinging back, saying, yeah, it is important to know how to do math and make change and stuff like that. Self-esteem is important, but that's not the only issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the external discipline, if I knew another way, you know, I would prefer not to spank. But I think some of the external discipline does allow them in the future to have some internal discipline.
I think the issues around discipline I agree with. And I think that one of the myths that's in our culture is that if you don't spank, that there are no other external...